following program is brought to you by your friends at Podcast One.
Today's Corolla Classics is brought to you by LifeLock. This pandemic has led to an astounding increase in unemployment benefit claims filed across the country. There are con artists taking advantage of this, and they've filed tens of thousands of fraudulent unemployment claims using consumers' identities. All right, so it's important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting our lives, because those cases that I was talking about have officially moved up to the number one spot in America. And that's from the FTC. LifeLock detects a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number, for sale on the dark web. And if they detect your information has potentially been compromised, they send you an alert. It's LifeLock. It's the greatest. Right, Gio?
No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions in all businesses, but you can find out if your information is on the dark web. Get your free dark web scan at LifeLock.com/scan. Pick the plan that's right for you and save up to 25% off your first year with promo code Adam. That's a free scan at LifeLock.com/scan and 25% off with promo code Adam.
Hello and welcome to Corolla Classics for Sunday, October 25th, 2020. You know how the show goes. We're going to play some incredible clips from the Adam Corolla Show and his almost 3,000 episodes of podcasting. My name is Chris Loxamana, executive producer of the Adam Corolla Show. And with me, as always, Corolla archivist, super fan Giovanni.
That 3,000th episode is probably going to happen right before they start on the anniversary, or right after. It's going to be so close that it's going to be like, oh man, couldn't you guys take a couple extra days off? Or we shouldn't take those extra days off.
Yeah, that's going to be a pretty wild month, I feel.
It's going to be fun.
All right, let's get going with our first clip. Now, earlier this week, Adam had Matt Fondelier on to retell a little bit of their trip to Lime Rock and the East Coast, where Matt had to help and load or unload stuff from Bob Sharp's house, and they had a camera
in slippery shoes,
in his dress shoes, and they touched on it this week, but it's such a funny story. I want you guys to hear the full nitty-gritty version.
This is from the same episode that starred yesterday's show, the Paul Scheer episode, Adam Corolla Show 1130. This is the opening episode without Paul. Allison Rose and Brian Bishop are also featured. July 2013, Adam is fresh from the trip, and he has some thoughts about what happened. And in this breakdown, they have the closer with a very disgusting meal that Mike August made sure to help himself to while telling him how gross it was. Check it out.
Get it on, no choice but to get it on mandate. Get it on. Welcome to the show. Good day, Allison.
Hello,
Rosen.
Hello, Adam Corolla.
Good day, Bald Brian.
Hey.
As asked by whom, Brian?
We haven't gotten any of it for a while because I haven't been doing it in New York, so that was requested by me. But top drop if you want to hear your top drop.
All right.
You could have just made someone up. No one is going to check.
Rallison Ozen really wanted that one.
You have your Hooray for Bollywood.
Yes, the Wolverine.
The Wolverine coming up. I have a story. It's been a while since we banked some shows in New York City. Mike August yawned. I will tell you the story of seeing Mike August yawn.
I can't even imagine what that is like.
Now all I have to do is see a squirrel shit, and I'm done.
You're done.
And I'm done. I saw Mike. Oh, I got Sonny Natalia in the next room, by the way. Fondelier will give me an assist on what was the world's longest day, right? It was a 24-hour day.
It was an odyssey. It was truly an odyssey.
It was an odyssey. And we'll tell you that. That was Monday when everyone was leaving New York. We were just getting to work. In Montreal every year, Andy Kindler does this state of the industry address where he gets up there and he, you know, roasts all the folks in the industry. And I guess it's attended by the industry and network people and folks like that. And I guess a fair bit of this one, which is kind of flattering, was directed at me being a Nazi and a Hitler-esque character and being bigoted and all that kind of stuff. And people just tweet me things and so they tweeted me this article that says one of the most brutal slangs was delivered to Adam Corolla, a widely loathed symbol of comedy hackdom.
Well, finally someone said it.
At his hackiest. I don't know, like when you're writing an article, how much are you allowed to inject into that?
It seems like a lot. Yeah.
A lot? Widely loathed?
Symbol of hackdom at its hackiest.
I feel like I'm a lot of things, but I don't feel hacky my thing. Like, I'm not a pie in the face kind
of
guy.
This could be the greatest example of ironic writing ever, though, with all the hacky symbolism.
Well, references. I would argue that calling someone an unfunny Hitler is sort of hacky.
Yeah.
Ironically.
What I mean.
Right. Mm-hmm. But anyway, at a certain point, he went on to just basically say that Corolla's like Hitler, except for Hitler, if Hitler weren't funny.
Isn't that the construction you used on the back of your book?
I think it is, except for, it was like Jesus and gouging. Yeah. A baby doll would not get this reference at all. And neither would my editor.
We walked down the hall, and no one here knows of any Hitler joke stories.
Anyway, no knock-knock Hitler stories. Anyway, I'm a bigot with a capital Nazi, is what he went on to say.
Which, that's just misspelling.
Which is fine with me. I don't know.
It's an honor.
By the way, I know, but here's the thing. What do you got to do to be a bigot these days? Or, homophobic? Or, first off, as far as the Nazi and the Hitler part, he's got this one all screwed up. All I ever say is everyone should be more like the Jews. That's my only Jew statement, is let's all do it like the Jews. Get with the family, get with the education, get with the program. I don't believe that was part of Hitler's. I don't think that was one of the planks in his platform.
I don't think it was a PS.
But either way, I'm flattered by it. And I do want to.
Wait, which part are you flattered by?
I love the idea that someone would just burn these kind of calories on me when, again, there's things you can say to me that would hurt my feelings, but you can't call me short because I'm 6'2".
Mm-hmm.
So I'm 6'2". I have a measuring tape. I'm aware that I'm 6'2". And you can go, he's the dwarfiest, shortest, squattiest. And it's like, that's
dwarfed him at its dwarfiest.
Yeah. Make fun of other things that would hurt a little more. So, calling me a Nazi is obviously insane. So it doesn't feel like anything.
Right.
Or even calling me hacky doesn't feel like anything. Which, by the way, as I've said, I much prefer the -4-star reviews than a 1.5 or 2-star review.
Because
mm-hmm. that's like they're trying. They're being sincere. And this is what they've come up with. So it's fine. I just wanted to talk about this or take this opportunity for a moment to say at a certain point, and Gary can find the rest of the article, the lady who wrote the article went on to explain that he was saying this to a large group of people who seemed to agree with him. Basically, there wasn't a lot of naysayers in the crowd. No one stood up for me, I guess.
Is it the kind of thing where, like, at a roast you say horrible things about someone, but no one stands up and goes, what are you – he is a gentleman. You don't say that. Like, they just kind of go along with it and laugh? I'm only guessing.
Yeah, sure. That's how it goes. But I think in order to if you have an angle and you're writing a story, this helps you with your insane angle. Gary will find it on there. Allison, you can read it if you can.
As always, the state of the industry leaves a lot of room for improvement, but Kindler is just kidding when he dismisses it all as a steaming pile of shit, except for Corolla. There's no hope of redemption for Corolla. In closing, Kindler offered this nugget of divine truth. Quote, if you're a comedian and you're not saying anything funny, you're just a racist.
Thank you. Now, Gary, find the fucking part in the article where it says the room did not.
You stupid honky.
Disagree with you, fucking cracker. All right. So we'll find that in a second. But anyway, here's what I have to say. Tell Sonny and Natalia to hold their ears. What I have to say to the potential industry that was in the audience.
They're actually holding their ears.
Good.
That's so cute.
You guys can all fuck yourself. I have a fucking pirate ship. You understand? I just got back from Vancouver.
I
sold out a theater and went through 100 cases in Mancrea. I don't need you. That's why we're here. That's why I built this. NBC, CBS. Andy Kindler does not matter to me. Everybody, get yourself in a nice daisy chain and fuck each other. Because I don't give a fuck. Say what you want. Lie. Do whatever you want. Blackball me. Push me to the outside of the industry. It doesn't matter. I'll take me with me. I'll take my fans with me. I'll sell my books. I'll do my podcast. And as long as everyone who's listening to this podcast tells a friend, comes out to the liquor store, buys a bottle, buys a book, shares it with a friend, then the entire industry can go fuck itself. That's why I did this. I don't care.
If you're lobbying for next year's keynote address, this is not the way to do it.
I'm saying I'm fucking Teflon Don. You can't touch me. First off, I'm not interested in doing your...
He went to jail for the rest of his life.
Oh, shit. But I think he ate, like, prosciutto from inside.
Oh, yeah. It's like in Goodfellas. They're slicing it real thin.
Real thin with the razor. There's nothing you can do to me because I've built my own pirate ship and I'm already outside of the industry. So there's no threats. There's no boycotts. There's none of that. As long as the people, listen to this, share it with a friend and continue to support what we do here, then we're done. We don't need it. And that was the whole point. And that's what these guys do. They do this kind of stuff and they try to get you to fold and conform and come back because you need them, because they are the platform for you. But we have built our own platform, and I would never want to go back and do those shitty network shows anyway. Here's what it says.
While no PC impresario himself, Kindler betrayed genuine disgust with Carolla's largely acknowledged racism and sexism, and it didn't seem there was a single voice of dissent in the packed house. Do you know anyone who was actually there?
No, I don't. I wouldn't hear about any of this stuff, but people tweet it to me, and I'm, like I said, I'm amused by it. It sort of puts a smile on my face.
I do think, from what I read, you were one of a number of people that he said stuff about.
Listen, I would never be so delusional as to think that I was the main focus of his ire, but
you might have been.
Oh, maybe I was, but either way, it's neither here nor there. Where are we sitting now? We're sitting in my warehouse, and we're sitting at my studio that I built, and you guys supported this pirate ship, and now we're, you know, $850,000 toward our $1 million for the next independent film on Fund Anything. What the fuck do we need the people in that audience for? And those guys are hacks who just wet their beaks and then fuck with the product anyway. So, thank you, Andy. I'm fine with your opinion. I'm really not upset or offended or anything like that. In a weird way, like I said, I'm flattered, sort of just like you should be if a young boy tugs on your pigtails. But once you get in your 40s, it's probably time to put that in your rearview mirror.
And
but I'm saying
your hairstyle.
Yeah, I'm flattered by it, and I'm just here to tell the folks, A, I don't care, B, I'm never going back, and C, thank you all for what you've done and continuing to make this possible and have the employees, except for Chris Maxipata, who I'm looking at. New haircut.
New hair.
Looking good, buddy. Looking good. All right, the kids are coming in a couple of few. First, the Odyssey on Monday.
What are you talking about?
After we left New York, or everyone else left New York, I said, how far is Lime Rock, Connecticut, the racetrack in Lime Rock, or Lime Rock, the racetrack, from where we are? And somebody looked it up and said, like an hour, or 75 miles, or something like that, from Manhattan. And I said, all right, that was Paul Newman's home track. Bob Sharp lives right there by the track, who was Newman Sharp and who was his partner for the guy built him his first race car, the guy who led the team, the Sharp of Newman Sharp, and then another guy by the name of Sam Posey, who lives right in there and was one of Paul's driving partners as well. And I said, well, I'm pecking away at this Paul Newman dock, which is, don't ask me questions. I don't have any answers. Just all I know, if I'm going to be an hour away from Lime Rock, I'm going to try to go get Bob Sharp. And by the way, I don't know if we have any pictures or any of that stuff, but Bob Sharp's house is just a bunch of Paul Newman helmets and fire suits and old pictures and crazy discussions about, you know, when his son died and how they handled it. You know, he was with Paul basically touring the country in a Winnebago doing all these races when Paul's son died, and I think he overdosed. And then same thing when Paul Fitzy Jim Fitzgerald, Paul's driving partner, died in Florida in a race and stuff. And I was like, how did all this stuff go down? Like, you guys were together during all this. You continued to race through
we're
all this stuff.
To Florida!
So it was a really interesting, very interesting interview and a very interesting. But the odyssey was we did a Mangria tasting in Manhattan on Sunday night. And then I was slated to do Howard Stern Monday morning, of course. And that was great. Howard was great because I said, look, I'm doing this Road Hard thing and we're doing this crowdfunding thing. And you think you could squeeze in, you know, a segment or two so I could get a little, you know, get a little bump, which he very generously did. And but it was show up downtown, you know, show up on a Midtown at 6:45 or something like that. Now, Mike and I had all our stuff. We had a week's worth of luggage, and now on top of that, I had all my driving gear. I had helmet, fire suit, shoes, gloves, a whole Hans device, the whole big driving suit
thing. Who brought that all out to New York?
I brought it.
I thought you didn't check a bag, though.
I didn't.
Oh, Adam had a very large carry-on.
I had
shaped.
Big bulbous.
You got a hockey bag.
Big manatee of a carry-on with another carry-on. And like I said, Matt, I don't know if you have any pictures, Lime Rock.
Yeah, we're pulling them up right now.
Okay. They were going to bring this super behemoth Newman car out there for me to drive a few laps around Paul Newman's home track and Paul Newman's old car, blah, blah, blah. And that's why I was trucking with the helmet, with the fire suit, with stuff, not to mention a week's worth of socks and underpants and God knows what else. So we had to be checked out. It was like, I'll see you down in the lobby at 6:20, checked out. By the way, I hate that checked out early shit. Like,
yeah.
I want to go do Stern and then come back and get my shit. But this was, now get the F out of here. You can go to adamcarolla.com and we'll show you a few pictures and we'll scroll through a few and you find a few of these things. There's the super behemoth car, which is parked in the middle of the Lime Rock Raceway. Paul Newman's name over it, the whole nine yards. But you can, not this picture, you can find some of the Wall of Fame stuff. Anyway, so it was Mike August sitting there 6:20 in the morning. All right, all the luggage into the cab, off to do Howard Stern. Now all luggage out of cab, through security, up 29 floors, and off to do Howard Stern, but with big
with all your
fucking
luggage,
caravan of luggage in green room and all that stuff. Did Stern. Stern was great. Did about an hour. And, if you look at couple pictures. By the way, there's Tom Cruise in his driving suit next to Paul Newman, because Cruise drove for Bob Sharp as well too. So it's this crazy, just museum of celebrities and race cars and just you know
exercise equipment.
Yes. So do Stern now down to the street level, and we got to rent a car because we're driving out to Lime Rock. And pull up, you know, six blocks of dragging more luggage to the rent a car in the middle of Manhattan. It's 8:30 in the morning now. You know, it takes about a half hour. Load up the car, get it. Mike drives like an insane. He drives like he's angry at gas. That's how he drives. And others. And we get
others who have gas.
Others who have gas. And we drive like fucking balls, but it's way out there. I mean, it's way deep Connecticut. It took us 3.5 hours to get there. And if it took us 40 minutes to get out of Manhattan, you know, it was so congested. It's the middle of the day, Monday morning. And we finally get to the track. And by the time we get to the track, it's too late for me to drive the car. We have to sit down and do Sam Posey. And then we're going to haul ass out of there and get to Bob Sharp's place because we have an 8:30?
It was 8 o'clock on the dot.
8 o'clock flight. 8 p.m. out of JFK. Now, we got to drive. And we got to drive like stink because we're I don't know where Connecticut, but we got to get to JFK. So first, after we get our track interview, throw everyone in the car. And Mike, like I said, he doesn't drive. He drives fast, but not skillfully. Most people who drive at a certain pace have a certain skill level. He has almost no skill level, but drives at that pace, which means
just recklessly
makes for a rough ride. So Matt's back, sitting in the back seat, and it's hot, as you guys remember.
Over 100.
Yeah, and he's in the back, and he's got his phone out, and he's trying to do the whole GPS thing, and we're trying to find this little dot in the middle of Connecticut, which is Bob Sharp's house, which is, you know, way down a windy. I mean, this is deep, you know, you don't know these places exist kind of places.
There were like 15 cemeteries alongside the road. It was fucking out there.
And like headstones that were in the 1600s and stuff, like crazy. And he's M. Night Shyamalan type of movie, type themes going on here. And so we're going along, and I don't know that Matt's having a hard time, but Matt's having a hard time. It's like someone. It's like a St. Bernard. No one cracked the window, and there's no water back there. And he's trying to read the map, and Mike's driving like an ass wipe, you know. And it's hotter and shit.
He hasn't seen a toilet bowl in an hour and a half.
And he's doing that thing, dude, where he's wearing jeans and dress shoes for some reason, which is making him that much more miserable, and like a dress shirt. And he drove out with the crew. So he left, what time, 6:30 in the morning?
Yeah, we met in the lobby, 6:30, hit the road.
So with the documentary crew?
Yes, he's in the same boat I am. You know, he had to drive out and set up. I had to go do Howard Stern and then go drive out. I mean, about the same crew. He jumps in with us to go to Bob Sharp's place. And at a certain point, we get up to Sharp's, and I'm like, all right, it's 3:15 in the afternoon, and flight's at 8, and God knows it's Monday, and I don't know what the traffic's like from Connecticut, this part of Connecticut to JFK, and this could take us a while. And I'm like, wheels up, 5 p.m. We're on the road moving toward JFK at 5 p.m., and it's like 3:15 now, and we got a guy upstairs who's not getting any younger and is a encyclopedia of Paul Newman information. He met him when Paul Newman came to the track with his son at Lime Rock, and just he was practicing and just said, hey, could you take me and my son for some hot laps around here? Then he said, hey, can you build me a car? And the next thing you know, the 20 years of traveling the country as a race team. You know, I said, this guy was there through the salad dressings. I got to get an hour and a half with this guy.
The salad dressing days.
So get it set up. And at a certain point, we're going upstairs and everyone's kind of puttering around and I'm doing it. Let's get it moving. Yeah. And I turn around and I say, Matt, let's go. Let's get the flags, get the equipment, get the sandbags, get them upstairs. And he goes,
boom.
He goes, I was going to give Bob this release to sign. I said, don't worry about the release. I'll get the release. You get the stuff set up. And I looked at him. He's beet red, sweating profusely. I mean, he was having an event, like a cardiac event.
He was holding it back.
What was going on, Matt?
First of all, if I had only known this was going to be the beginning of the day, I think I would have been able to temper the pacing a little bit better. But yeah, car sick, like you could not believe. Wearing the dress shoes because kind of a related story. I got punked into thinking we were going for a very nice dinner while in New York, so I only brought the nice shoes with
me. Well, write that story, the cummerbund story
down.
Yeah,
we'll tell that one another time.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, any excuse to just stand there in that glorious air-conditioned kitchen just while he signed the release.
Yeah. So he's turning. He's
don't be so hasty. Read the contract. Read what it says.
He's weird, kind of penis red. He's not even red red. He's like a little
he's purple.
He's got a little purple in him.
Veiny.
And he's just sweating profusely. And I'm like, we got to get rolling. And then we went upstairs, the hottest part of the house, by the way, and because that was sort of the trophy room and set up with Bob. Knocked out our interview, and now it's 5:15, and I'm like, we are gone, and we're heading for this airport, and it's wheels up, and it's 5:18, and Mike's driving angry again. And Matt's in the back with his phone, and now Matt's phone's running out of juice because he's been using the GPS on it too much. And we're taking the 22 through the God knows what.
He was rattling off freeways at that point.
Mike was angry at the highway system. And
what kind of car were you guys in, just so I can visualize how uncomfortable Matt
like
was?
Like a Buick Envoy or something, like minivan or something. And Matt was like going,
it's like a white flag.
Matt's like, we got to go to the 22. And Matt and Mike's like, no, I'm not going back on the 22. And it's like, well, that's what my, and I'm like, I'm having that conversation with Mike August that you only have with Mike August where I'm going, hold on, Matt, what is your phone telling you to do? It's telling us to take the 22. Mike, I'm not taking the 22, you know? Well, hold on. Do you have another way to go? Yes. Is it from your phone? Are you listening? Or do you want to go the way what says on Matt's phone? Yes, I do. Well, it says we have to get on the 22. No, we're not taking the 22. It's like fucking stupid circle of an argument we have all the time, you know?
Where was August getting his plan B?
August had looked at his... You talking about birth control?
Yeah, where's he picking that up?
That's a very personal question and way off the topic.
Seriously.
He's looked at his phone while I was interviewing Bob Sharp. He's figured out a way to get to JFK that didn't involve the 22, but it's unclear whether he's willing to go on the 22 or not. Yes?
Exactly. Between your phone, my phone, and August, we're all on three different plans using three different mappings. We have a printed out map. And I'm just hoping that we're going to go somewhere August and Adam will be happy.
I'm in the passenger seat going, just listen to what the sick guy with the dress shoes is telling you to do. He's on a phone right now. So Mike's driving angry again. And then we get to this three-lane highway. And it's a kind of thing where now we're about an hour and 15 away from the airport. And then it all comes to a stop. Just three lanes. Nothing. Boom. Stop. And there's no worse feeling.
Boom.
Now, we're going on a 24-hour day here. We've been in New York. You know, we left Thursday. We're at my house at 5:30 in the morning. Everybody's ready to, and nobody wants to miss this flight. And it's 8. It's about, timeline me here. It's about 6:15, 6:30.
Yep.
But we know we're within striking distance. The airport's probably 30, 40 miles away, but we're stopped. We're literally parked on the beltway. And I was like, God damn, what are we talking about here? Is this traffic or is it an accident or what have you? Turns out there is a big rig that like has the roof torn off it, like the trailer with the roof torn off. Like it's tacoed in the middle. I've never seen a big, it's not a jackknife big rig. It's the rig, it's the actual payload itself, that the trailer is folded down in the middle.
Tried to get under an overpass that was too low.
Yeah, I don't know. But it didn't clip the front. It clipped the middle, or I don't know what it was, but it was a crazy big rig accident.
It was a fucking mess.
And at a certain point, we're all just sitting there, and everyone feels like shit. Everyone's going off of vapors now. We're on hour 19, and some guys with their windows rolled all the way down pull up next to us, and they're just cranking. They're cranking the Sacco, whatever that music is, the Latin fucked up whatever. I'll give you a little shot.
Soca.
Yeah, and windows down and just blaring, and I'm just like, well, first off, we know we're not in Connecticut anymore. We're back. That much we know, and stuff's just grinding, and at the same time. Peter Cetera pops up on our radio, and I swear to God, this pops up. And I'm like, so we're sitting there listening to the whitest music on the planet while this fucking rave is going on, this south of the border rave is going on. And I said, you know what? Fuck it. This guy's right next to you. Rolled our windows down. Crank it up. Fuck, we just had this blaring. Let's turn it all the way up. Mike's like, I don't give a fuck. He'll fight in the street now. I roll all the windows down. We'll pull up right next to the guys with the soca music. Yeah. And I just crank it, just cranking up clouds.
Did
like,
they
crank it up. Yes. They just looked at us like, what the fuck is this? It's like, hey, how you like it? How you like me now, bitch? This white people music. We can annoy as well. You don't have to fucking market cornered on that. So it lifted the tension momentarily.
The blasting music was great for my car signals, by the way, the whole time.
What made you sicker, the soca or Peter Cetera?
It was everything.
So now we pass the big rig, but we got 52 minutes before our flight leaves, and we're driving. Mike's driving angry again, which is fine. And we say to Matt, well, we got a problem, low man on the totem pole. The rental car drop-off is not at the airport. It's one of those shuttle, tram, take the train, whatever ones. There should be a concierge thing because this shit must happen all the time. I would gladly give some guy in a yellow vest $100 just to be able to throw him the keys and jump out of the car and have him drive it over. And I'm sure the rental car company would happily take my $100 for the $9 an hour guy, 15 minutes extra took him to get in the Buick and drive it over to the thing. But that service.
But instead you had Matt do it for free?
Yeah. Well, we said, look, Matt, there's three of us. No sense all three of us missing the flight.
That's just math.
That's just math. And we will try. Now, we pulled up to the airport at 7:30.
I would say it was about 5 after 7 that you guys got dropped off because check-in was around 7:30.
Oh,
and
okay.
And that plays into, I remember my time.
I don't remember. 55 minutes till the flight leaves seems a little lengthy. I think it was more like 7:20, 7 something like that. But anyway, 7:15, 7:20. But this place was off campus, you know. And I just said, you know, we jumped out and yelled, we'll try to hold it for you. Because I've had it happen where you said, oh, my friend's in security and he's coming right now and he's checked in already. Could you just hold the door? Except for Matt's phone is dead.
Oh, no.
He has no. Now we have no way of knowing. Like, if we knew he was close, we could try for it. Now it's going to be a weird attempt if we're not in communication with Matt's phone.
How upset were you guys by this?
Dead. More upset when I found out some information 15 minutes later. So I said, Matt, drop it off. Run as fast as you can. And we'll try and do what we can do. And then Mike and I pulled up, and the flight was delayed for 2 hours. Now, I had this problem.
It's like that moment when you close the elevator doors and someone walks up. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm doing everything I can. It closes, then it opens, and they made it. It's like,
now
you're still here.
My thinking was, you know, shit. Like, first, it kind of felt good for Matt, and then bad for me. Then I thought, well, shit, we can't get hold of Matt. And it's 7:32 now. And if I were Matt, I would just go, fuck it. I'll keep the car. I'll either drive back to Manhattan or I'll just check myself into a hotel and catch a flight tomorrow. I'm not going to make it. And if I dump the car off and take off on the tram and don't make the flight, now I'm just stuck at the airport with no car.
Because that's the last flight of the night.
I think that we checked. One of the things we did, which burned up the phone, was checking on more flights later on because we weren't going to make it and there was nothing. And so Matt then went off into the night. Mike and I went and attempted to get into the Virgin Lounge, where, of course, we're denied. And this one, too, which is always funny, where they go, but you can get a $75 pass if you'd like to come in. And I go, yeah, and then what about him? Yeah, it's another $75. And it's like, well, for $75, we can go down to the steak joint that's in the airport and have a nice porterhouse and a couple glasses of Pinot Noir. You know, I mean, you're sort of defeating the purpose of this.
What kind of perk is it at that point?
It's not really a perk. I can get – well, here's the deal. It's not free booze if it's $75.
Yeah.
I'll just go buy $13 worth of free booze and then just eat myself some ribs downstairs and I'll get out for $42. So I don't know what this is. And then as I was walking away, she's like, we do foot rubs. I was like, I don't like myself that much.
Yeah.
And I'm not comfortable. It's too intimate for me. So we then walked.
You never gotten a foot rub?
She did. No. She did the thing where she said, and this is the one I like, too. She went, there is another sort of drip tray lounge. I don't know if she called it that, but sort of a catch-all.
Oh, yeah.
You know, where the little people can go hang out for free.
You mean the gate?
Yeah, like go. There is a lounge. There's a sub-lounge.
Pinkberry.
Yeah, and she goes, there's another lounge that you could get into with your ticket over there, but it's kind of a, you know, it's not, no foot rubs going down there. And I was like, all right, and then she did this one. It's before the part where you know nothing about where you work or anything.
Yeah.
She goes, it is before security. And I go, it's before security? And she goes, yeah. And I go, oh, well, then we can't go there. We just cleared security. I'm not going to go back outside of the airport. And then she goes, oh, no, it's after. It's after security. It's like, okay, it's after then because that makes more sense to me. Yeah, yeah. And then
seems
like
really unnecessary information that she was imparting.
Right. And then I was like, well, where is it? And she couldn't describe where it was, even though she worked there and it was like their sister lounge. So Mike and I went there And thank God for their entree. They had hot food.
Mm-hmm.
Curried fish. Because on a blistering Connecticut summer day, when you're going on 24 hours of non-sleep, and you've been out in the fucking sun all day, and you're depleted, you always think, I want curry, but I want fish. You know, but how do I combine curried fish? Like,
right.
Mike ate half the pot. Told me it was horrible with every bite. Still finished off. But it's like, there's nothing I could go for less than curried fish. And in terms of a sort of universal food, like there's only one hot meal we can put out. There are going to be many, many people coming from many parts of the globe that are all going to be converging here. Weary travelers. What is a nice compromise meal? I don't know, but it must contain curry. Like, does you feel like that's...
I can't think of anything more polarizing. Maybe cilantro fish.
Yeah, I know. It was a weird... Matt, was that a weird call?
Totally bizarre. I was just glad they had those Costco turkey wraps. I just stacked up on those.
So you were there.
Yeah, I stepped on it. So Mike, because he's a decent human being, is calling Alamo, calling the desk, going, did he drop the car off? Tell him if this guy walks in, pitting out, dress shoes, sweating through his shirt, breathing heavily... penis red,
asking for purple, the restroom.
Asking for the restroom. If that guy comes in and drops off a Buick Envoy, tell him, come to the airport, the flight's delayed, you know. And it was a lot of him on hold, and then a lot of he hadn't got there yet, which was, oh, crap, he took the car and went to a hotel. And then he did drop the car off. And then we were just sitting in this lounge at some point, a super out of breath, sweaty, disheveled Matt just appeared in front of us.
I fucking made it, man.
He made it. And then we had one of the weirdest announcements we ever had, which is, all right, the flight's going to be delayed till 10 o'clock. All right. It's supposed to be 8 o'clock. Now it's 10 o'clock. Everyone's been on the road since 6:30 that morning. But all right, we'll take our 10 o'clock flight. Then we all showed up at the Virgin And we all showed up. And everyone's standing around like, should we get on the plane? Do we get on the plane? And the pilot came out and he said, look, we're not going to get out of here till 1 a.m. But if we all get on the plane now, this is a very big but. We all get on the plane now, they might let us push off. But we all got to get on the plane. And I was like, it just sounds weird and unprofessional to me. And plus... Yeah. He looked like Spicoli. I didn't know he was a pilot. He's like short sleeves, kind of young guy and stuff. I said, that's not the pilot. And August's like, I think that's a pilot. And I was like, all right. And we all piled onto the plane. And then we sat for 2 hours. And then we took off. And then we landed in L.A. at about 3:10. And then I walked through the door at 3:40. And then I tacked the 3 hours on. And I went, well, 24 hours. That was 24 goddamn hours. But
Did no one balk at this notion of everyone getting on the plane to sit for 3 hours?
There was one guy who was trying to convince everybody to rebel.
His name was
Adam. Remember that, Adam?
There was one guy who recognized me, and he worked for some production company or something, right?
That's some voiceover thing, I think.
He worked for an agent. And you want to know why I wasn't doing more voiceover work? And he was trying to get everyone, we can get an $80 voucher and they have to put us up at a hotel if we all walk right now. And I was like, no.
Who's with
no,
me?
No. No. He was like wearing flip-flops and a dress shirt and he was like walking around trying to get everyone fired up to walk and get, I don't know, more curry. I don't know what his plan was. But it wasn't convincing.
He's trying to unionize the passengers?
He was. There was one guy who was trying to start a rebellion.
Fucking Norm Murray.
Oh, yeah. We were having Middle Eastern Spring or something in there. I don't know what the hell it was. The point is we said, look, screw you, flip-flops, with the voiceover work. I'm getting on the plane. And we got on the plane, and then we just sat there for 2 hours. And maybe he was right. But either way, we were back in L.A. technically Tuesday at 3 a.m. poor Rob had to come pick us up at 3:30 in the morning, and that was a nice. I'm glad I had some interviews lined up for the following morning.
Yeah, because that was like the best way to wake up.
That was awesome.
And that was Adam, August, and the Porcelain Punishers' Endless Day on the East Coast back in 2013. Now, a lot of people ask, why do they call Matt the Porcelain Punisher? And the reason is there was a
he gets revenge on toilets for murdering his family in Central Park.
That's right. Well, unfortunately, there's a couple reasons. I think I know the actual reason, but it's interwoven with other reasons. So Matt used to go to Mexico a ton, and I think that had to do with it because he would always come back and have the
with
shit.
Parasites.
Yeah. But what the real issue is, one time Adam got into it with Matt a little bit, and someone went up to Adam. And because Matt would poop so much at work, someone went up to Adam and said, Adam, you're stressing him out so much that he has to poop all the time. Like, you're giving him stress poops or the stress shits. And so he became known among all of us as a guy who just shits all the time, especially when you get stressed. And Adam eventually, on the house, coined the term. Well, it started with the bowl bruiser and evolved into the Porcelain Punisher, which he's known for, or known as today. And he has great songs. Check him out on YouTube. Courtesy.
We have to find if the origin was, I don't know if it was done on air, if it happened off air, then it was brought up on air. That is a request I'm still searching for, is the first Porcelain Punisher mentioned on the podcast. I think it was a mention of something he coined off air, but it's always better when it happens naturally on the show.
See, I think it was on air. And I think
we'll find out.
And I think it was, but I think it was from On the House, Ace on the House.
Ooh, that's probably correct. But yeah. We can play that.
Yeah, we can play any of the other shows. Whatever. People need to hear all of his greatest moments. We don't have to.
Yeah, like there's a lot of people who never listen to Ace on the House, and they don't realize that 15 to 20 minutes of every episode is hilarious comedy. Or if you like Eric Stromer, the way he talks to Eric is some of the funniest I've ever heard in my entire life. Or the whole Ray archives. I mean, there's so many things on there that if you're an Adam Carolla hardcore listener and you haven't heard Ace on the House, you're missing out. If you don't listen to Adam and Drew's show, you're missing out.
Yeah.
You can just listen to the ACS. But maybe we should present some more of that content for people who may not have heard it.
I think so, because Adam is still equally as funny on all those shows.
Yeah, now, it's crazy. Even on the shows where he's trying to be serious, it's like, wait, you can't have 5 minutes of the best comedy ever, and here nobody knows.
Very true. All right. Also earlier this week, Tim Minchin guested, and he zoomed in all the way from Sydney to promote his new album. And we loved him so much, we want to play a little bit more of him when he was in our studio back in 2011.
That quality was impeccable, by the way. Adam Carolla Show 601, Tim Minchin, Allison Rosen, Brian Bishop. This is his first appearance. This is June of 2011. And because he was just on, and we just played that other clip where it was discussed on his episode, it felt full circle. This is how it started. And if you want to hear the rest of this, there's a couple news stories we didn't include at the end. Podcast One Premium, home of all your favorite podcasts. You can find this entire full episode. Again, that was June 2011, Tim Minchin, 601. Check it out.
Charlie Sheen did steroids during Major League,
mm-hmm.
the filming of. Surprising, because he's such a sober, living, clean kind of guy.
Yeah.
But I liked Major League.
Yeah. Yeah.
If these news stories include my opinions of movies, then I just included it.
Yeah, I'll tell you a big mistake I made was after playing in a celebrity minor league like hardball game or something. The first baseman, like Santos or whatever his name is, a crazy black guy was into
in the
Santeria.
Movie?
Yeah.
Pedro Serrano.
Yeah.
Dennis Haysbert.
Can't swing a baseball bat.
Really?
To save his goddamn life.
Well, how long ago was this?
Oh, 10 years ago. Oh, gosh.
In the
13,
movie, he was
14
very
years
convincing.
Ago. He could not. I played a hardball game with him.
Wow,
he could not. I swing a bat.
Not been kind to
No,
Pedro.
This wasn't time. This is 13, 14. 14, 15 years ago now. I mean, he was 38 years old or something.
Time has not been kind to Pedro Serrano.
I don't know what time. I swear, I think he did. I played in this game with him like 3 years after Major League or
Major
five.
Major League was 1990.
1990?
This Sports probably, have not been kind to him.
This was probably 95, 94,
wow.
95. Me and Jimmy were playing, and he couldn't fucking swing a bat.
Wow.
And I swung a much better bat than he swung, but he was one of these athletic guys who probably played soccer growing up or something. I don't know what the deal was, but I got the payback when we got in the shower.
Ah, he one-upped you?
He one-upped every dude in that fucking stadium. I don't know what we're thinking getting in the fucking shower with that guy, but, you know, all things being relative, not the dude to stand next to.
No.
In the shower.
Because the other guys will totally laugh at you in the shower.
You
wanted Corbin Burns in
there. I will not mention any names, but there was a guy that, you know, we played in the game with us, and he did not have what I call a good gym dick.
Yeah.
Some guys hang a little better than others.
He may have been a grower, not a shower.
He was one of those, and at some point crossed paths with Serrano over there, not a good time.
Who has the best gym dick besides him?
It's the one you use. That's the best gym dick. Yeah, hold on, the more. Thank you. The more you know. Big swimmer on that.
There's a preschool in Sweden called Igalia that wants to avoid using words, or is going to avoid using the words him and her, and instead will address their students as friends.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't want to ram gender bias down their throats. Society expects girls to be girly, nice, and pretty, and boys to be manly, rough, and outgoing, says Jenny Johnson, a teacher there. Igalia gives them a fantastic opportunity to be whoever they want to be.
Right.
And then also the staff. It's like CB Savage. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And also the staff is trying to help children discover new ideas when they play. And here's a quote. A concrete example could be when they're playing house and the role of the mom already is taken and they start to squabble. Then we suggest two moms or three moms and so on.
Let me just tell you this, as I've always explained this process to people anyway, but now I did a little experiment, a very expensive experiment. It's called having twins, and I have a boy and a girl, and they're five now. And my daughter wants to wear everything shiny, wants to put on makeup, wants mama to do her hair, wants to walk around with her American Girl doll, wants me to have tea with the American Girl doll. Everything about the nail polish and the sparklies, and everything's got to be pink, and everything's got to be fluffy, and everything has to be, is really like, I mean, she's essentially a transvestite at this point, you know. She's a cross-dresser. And, I mean, she has, like, it's almost a fetish with all the pink and all the Barbie and all the dolls and all the everything. And the boy is all about the trucks and the tank engines and the this and the that. And, you know, he loves himself some all the superheroes and all the Iron Man and all the Thor and all the Spider-Man. And if you, and it happens on occasion, they have their little placemats. He has his Speed McQueen placemat with the race car on it, and she has her, you know, Barbie placemat. And God forbid I'm making him breakfast and I set his bowl of cereal down on Natalia's Barbie thing. He just looks, he'll point at it and go, "God, that, remove this. I can't have, you're contaminating the bottom of my bowl with this bitch." And it's like, oh, someone must have swapped them around or something. You know, just eat your cereal, Sonny. No way. Get this bitch out from the bottom of my fucking bowl, old man, or I'll throw this fucking thing right in your face. It's like, freaked out, cooties, will not touch, get it away from me. There has never been a discussion with either one of them about any of this. As a matter of fact, I would like my daughter to tone it down a little bit. She's going crazy with the fucking hair and the makeup and the nail polish and all, and it has been since the fucking word go. And him with the tanks and Thomas the Tank Engine and the pickup trucks and all the stuff, he's been at it from the word go, and no one has said fucking shit to these two. That's who they are. That's exactly who they are. Why?
Well, you should ship them off to Sweden.
Why we've decided it's so evolved to knock that out of them? What has evolved about that? I don't understand what is so fucking progressive.
Yeah,
I mean, are they not going to fucking rest until there's a cock in my son's ass? Are they not
going to
sleep?
I'm not going to.
I will not. Let's drink some beers and rave. I'm just saying. He likes his fucking cars and tools and his action shit and his figurines, and she likes her dollies and her dresses, and is that such a bad thing? The fuck?
See, the thing is, I understand not wanting to impress upon little kids that you have to be this way because you are this, or you have to be this because of this, or
you
this is off the table.
Anything on
right.
them.
But to... I just feel like they are going too far with trying to wipe out any suggestion of male or female, because the truth, I mean, that's like a biological thing. We
what?
Have different organs. Yes, there are some people who are in between and it's got to suck to be them. But for everyone else, I don't think they're really bristling at the fact that they are a boy.
Well, the thing that drives me nuts is these people... they take almost all their cues from nature because they're not religious people. I'm an atheist too, and that's one thing I sadly share with these dicks. And they do a lot of, you know, in nature, and whenever they're trying to talk about like gay marriage or something, you know, there's gay monkeys and gay owls and penguins. It's like, okay, you take all your cues from nature? Good, let's stay on nature. They have male species and they have female species. They do very different things.
Look at our friends, the ducks.
That's right.
They look very different.
They act very differently, mm-hmm. and they have different roles. Mama duck does this, daddy duck does that. Once in a while, it gets caught on videotape, and it gets fucked over. But the point is they do that, and no one would ever say anything about it. Like, well, in the pod of nature, you know, in the whale pod, then the mama teaches the cub how to hunt, and the father goes ahead. And whatever, you're going to get involved? You're going to get a fucking ship and ram the daddy and tell him to get back in with mama? And why shouldn't mama go out and lead the thing? And daddy
right,
could teach
right.
it. No, you ask why hypocrites never say a fucking word about that. So, again, you love nature. Nature's smart. It has a perfect design. How about you shut the fuck up? Take a page from nature, lay down the narcissism for a second. We're just another creature that's roaming the planet. The ones you love so much, the ones you tout so much, the ones you want to protect so much, the ones that have the wisdom just sort of instilled in them. And that's us. That's us. That's just us with a department store. Guy goes and buys himself a dump truck. Chick goes over there and buys a dress. That's nature. Leave it the fuck alone. Stop trying to bend it to your will, and let's move on with our fucking lives. Would we already? And someone tell these assholes to shut up. All right.
That's the news. I'm Allison Rosen. Hey, assholes, shut up.
Thank you.
That was the news with Allison Rosen, sponsored by LegalZoom.
All right. We will take ourselves a quick break. Tim Minchin, our guest, is here. Stand-up comedian Tim Minchin. We'll take a quick break. Back with Tim next.
Yeah, yeah, if I didn't have you. If I didn't have you to hold me tight. If I didn't have you to lie with that night. If I didn't have you to share my sighs and to kiss me and dry my tears when I cry, will I really think that I would have somebody else? If I didn't have you, someone else would do. Your love is one in a million. You couldn't buy it at any price. But of the 9.999,000 other possible loves, statistically, some of them would be equally nice. Or maybe not as nice, but say smarter than you, or dumber but better at sport, or tracing. I'm just saying I probably
have somebody else.
Yeah.
Tim Minchin on the Adam Carolla Show.
Good to see you, Tim.
Hi.
That is funny. Tim, where was that shot? It looks amazing.
It's the Royal Albert Hall.
That is.
That song was quite new, and you can see me trying to fiddle with my pack. I've got in-ear fallback, and I couldn't hear it, and I'm singing slightly behind the beat, and you see me going, I can't hear myself.
Well, it's weird because you're doing the sort of a funny song, but in order to play the piano funny, you have to be really good at playing the piano.
Well, like not everyone thinks that, but...
I sort of know it as a performer that... You have to be able to sing, and you have to be able to sort of execute what you're doing, and fucking it up isn't going to be funny. It'll be funny if you execute your funny song the way you want to do it, right?
There's a long tradition of comedians doing a funny song, and part of the joke is that they're crap at music.
Right.
And I don't know. It doesn't work so well for me. I think it's really good if you can make people go, oh my God, this guy's got all these musical skills and he's using them for stupidity. That's kind of cool to waste your skills.
It's like Jackie Chan using his kung fu for laughter.
To be an idiot. That's a wonder. Can I have that?
Yes.
That simile?
Because the guy's wildly accomplished.
You just got here and now you're taking things from us?
He's a crazy athlete and he's great at whatever, but instead of movies where he's kicking the shit out of people, he's jumping through shopping carts and then popping
dinner
up.
Trays and yeah, exactly. That's like people like watching people who have contempt for their own form, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Now, where are you from?
Perth, Western Australia.
And how did you get embark on this whole crazy journey?
I mean, I'm a muso, and I used to write music for theatre, and I've been in a million bands, played covers and piano bars, and MD'd for cabaret. You know, I've done all these things, and
MD is like an MC, right?
MD is musical director, so like playing piano for a cabaret star, and all these jobs are all fine. And
right.
You know, I'm not a trained musician, so I was just glad I had a career in music. But I was also trying to be an actor and doing all this stuff. And somewhere in my late 20s, after a lot of, you know, sometimes acting, sometimes composing, sometimes playing in bands, I was still quite frustrated and poor and all that. And I thought, what would happen if I just kind of stuck it all to, like, if I just showed off? Mm-hmm. If I just went, I'm going to be as entertaining as I can for an hour and a half in a room, mm-hmm. what would it be? So I'd play a song and do some weird monologue and do a poem and try and surprise people. And when I first did that in sort of late 2003, people laughed. Like all the way through, I thought people would find it quirky, but they mm-hmm. just laughed, and I went, "Oh, this is all right." So I first really started doing what is similar to my shows now, sort of comedy, when I was about 30, and so I'm sort of six years in.
It's a nice example of it's like making a stew that you always had all the ingredients for, but it never really came out right because the ratio was wrong or you're trying to cook it in the wrong pot.
Because one day you'd make carrot stew and then another day you make onion stew.
Yeah. And it was like, you got to take them all and put them into that Jackie Chan pot. You know, that's weird. It's weird because I am in the same way. I had a bunch of skill sets that alone didn't amount to much, but when I sort of tried to put them together and found a venue for them, and then all of a sudden I started to make money.
It's pretty obvious in hindsight, isn't it? Hey, idiot, do all the things you're good at the same time. Yeah,
right. And take the things you know and the things you're. I got started in radio when Jimmy Kimmel said, "Well, come up with a character to do on the radio show." And I thought, "Well, what shall I do?" And then I thought, "I'm a carpenter, so I'll talk about carpentry." And Mr. Burcham, the character, was born, the woodshop teacher, but it worked because I was doing things that I knew about, and there was a certain truth to it. And you singing in a good singing voice, and actually
with good material
and good material, and but executing it, pulling it off is compelling.
And my shows are really concerts, you know, and unlike stand-ups, I guess. To an extent, laughter's not my only currency. You know, like at the end of my shows, I'll just play solo piano for a few minutes. And, you know, I see the whole thing as my job's to entertain and throw out ideas and talk about the things I think about in the most unique way possible. And in a way that engages the audience and I'm really comfortable on stage. I really enjoy being there. And I believe very strongly in sort of ending your show sweating and spent. You know, I think people like watching someone
unless you
blow their load.
Two shows,
you know?
In one night.
That's why I don't do two shows in one night.
I've tried that.
Yeah. I've done two shows once and it almost killed me. I've done three shows
three nights in a row.
Really?
It sucked.
You idiot.
Oh, my God.
But part of why you don't like it is because you know that you're saving yourself and it feels awful because it's not your instinct as a performance to save it. As a performer, you want to blow your entire load.
I concur, but it's just this. It's sort of weird and soul crushing as you walk out on the stage for the first time, knowing that there's going to be four and a half more hours of this to do before the night is through. Yeah,
but
and I don't play the piano is my problem.
But
I wish
it's
I
also
could play
yeah.
something.
But there's a couple of problems with it. One is you get to the same point in a bit, and you think you've already done that bit, and you get confused.
That's, yes. You go, have I said this to this audience
yeah,
or not?
That's awful. And the other thing I think is hard about doing multiple shows is that a little bit of your brain is really stupid, and that the way you do comedy, I think, is not only are you tricking the audience in a way, I mean, everyone knows, but in a way, we're all suspending our disbelief and saying, this is just, he's just saying this stuff. It's just coming to him for the first time. And your job as a comic is to sell that idea that it's just coming out of your head. And that, and a little bit of you, I think, tricks yourself as well. Every night you get up and on a certain level, you're almost believing yourself that you're saying it for the first time. And that little, that artifice you can't do when you do it three times in a night. You just feel like a whore.
Well, the worst,
like a machine.
Also, you'll talk to people and they'll go, for me, I'll take it to a deeper, weirder level. They'll go, oh, we saw you in Milwaukee, and now we're going to come out and see you in New York. And I'll go, oh, shit, there's one person there that saw me. And then I'll say to Mike, we got to do something different
because
one guy may or may not come out from Milwaukee. And it just fucks me up knowing that there's one person out there that saw the same thing.
You sort of need to believe your own lie a little bit.
I should.
Even though you have to assume every night that someone has seen it before. But you don't, do you? You sort of go, oh, this is all fresh.
I think there's a rule that you walk a fine line with music and comedy, which is the thing that's I've always, and maybe enjoy the best of both worlds, I don't know. But I've always been secretly jealous of musicians because they have to play their hits when they go and do a town, when they come to town. And then if a comedian sort of repeats his act that you saw last time he blew through town, then it's a disappointment.
Yeah.
But as it turns out, everything always comes out a little bit different anyway, at least for me, and I'm sure for you too. And if they saw it a year ago and enjoyed it, they'll enjoy it again.
I remember every
beat.
They
were drunk,
you know,
is the
that's
point.
That's right. And I've got fans who watch my shows dozens of times and seem to be able to find something new. And you're right. Once a song, the joke in a song is blown, it's not as bad as having a stand-up bit blown. That's
right.
Once you know the joke of a stand-up, you know, a spoken joke requires that build-up of tension and unexpected blah, blah, blah. My songs actually rely on that as well. A lot of my songs have long build-ups and these reveals, you know, and some of them are long, tense build-ups, and I need that tension in the room. And it's quite hard having an audience full of people who have watched everything I've ever made on YouTube or imported my records or whatever.
Right.
But you're right. There's no doubt that it's easier for me to... the people want to hear the songs anyway, even though they know the jokes.
Do you have... And you don't have to, but... We just got back from New York, so it was all sort of Broadway this and Broadway that.
Yeah.
And you've done some of that. Do you want to do that? Is that where you'd like that? I don't know. Coast out your golden years.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to get back on stage in a musical. Although I think comedy spoils you as a performer a bit, because although I've got unresolved acting and performance ambitions, the fact is, I know that going to a 6-month contract playing Joseph, you know, like, is going to annoy me, because the wonderful thing about comedy is if you're bored, you just
Joseph
change.
Is an amazing
the technical dream.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why that came into my head.
But gay, just call Joseph.
Joseph.
I don't even like people that call it Curb, by the way, for Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yeah, right.
But I guess if it's Joseph and the amazing Technicolor
We're
dream
talking cup. About musicals. There's only one Joseph. Come on.
I think I saw Donny Osmond in that, if you want to speak of gay, or somebody, some pop singer like Brittany.
Michael Damian.
No, it was like
Andrew Ridgeley.
Some love line. It's gay of you to even have an alternate suggestion.
Dude, are you gay?
Yes, I am.
If I just said The Phantom, would you know which one I meant?
I like
Phantom.
I love a musical.
The Billy Zane movie.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I think
I saw Billy Zane in a cafe recently.
What is the best musical? Life. Do you have one that you as a technician,
the one
and
I've
as an
just
artist,
is
where you
the
go
best musical ever?
The second best one written by somebody else.
I've got to admit, I'm a huge fan and of JC Super, Jesus Christ. There you go.
I love it too.
Jesus Christ Superstar is like it's camp. Kind of camp rock retelling of the death of Jesus, but the wicked thing about it is, and people kind of, as it ages and it becomes more like Jesus Christ, it's more sort of ridiculous that it ever existed.
You're people, gay for saying that.
people forget that it was the late 70s and these young writers put basically an atheist, a musical that said, let's tell the death of Jesus story from Judas's point of view. They got half the members of Deep Purple in the pit with the London Symphony Orchestra. They had Ian Gillan, the lead singer of Deep Purple, on stage playing Jesus, Murray Head playing Judas, and it became a hit, and people protested out. I mean, that it's not been superseded in terms of guts and impact.
Yeah. And I still love the music, man. Yeah, me too. I was just listening to it.
But Mormon, I mean...
You say late 70s. That was probably even midder
70s. Yeah, probably earlier.
Like, even tougher to get away with that.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. But yeah, I mean, Mormon is obviously revolutionizing...
The Book of Mormon. I mean,
the Book of Mormon.
Right. I
realize most of my listeners probably aren't. They don't have a cheat sheet with all the musicals.
I call Wicked.
Yeah. What do you do when there's just two syllables? Just
cats.
Yeah. I just call.
So the Book of Mormon, and find out what year Jesus Christ Superstar was. I don't know, they made it into a movie. Some point.
Yeah,
oh,
they made
it
a kind of radical Brechtian movie.
The Book 72. Of Mormon is 72.
Jesus,
that's early,
Christ.
Man. Superstar.
Totally.
So, the Book of Mormon, Matt and Trey's musical.
Yeah,
I hear it's unbelievable, but I've never seen it.
I haven't seen it either.
I don't know.
And when I first heard about it, I was furious because I write a lot of comedy about belief and stuff. Songs, and I was like, oh, that should have been me helping them write that. But the thing is, even though it's radical, it's written in a post South Park era. It's
not 1972.
No, it's not 1972, and it's I don't know what the precedent was. And there was another one written around there called Godspell, but I don't know much about it.
Sure, Godspell, and
I don't know.
And even movies
written.
Like Tommy were really fucking bizarre for the 70s.
Yeah.
And
this is
and
all the wall, and this is a. This is a pretty experimental time, but...
I think there's a lot of drugs that were involved, but I mean, it was crazy seeing some of that stuff taking place at a time when, on television, if a man... You know, you probably couldn't say, I'm pregnant
in a
sitcom.
Couldn't. A man couldn't, that's
a
true.
A man,
yeah.
We weren't evolved enough for a man to announce he
like
was pregnant. That's right.
A friend.
I don't know if in 1972 on a network primetime sitcom, you could have showed a couple in bed, even, you know, wearing pajamas,
yeah.
You know, or laying there on top of the bed or something like that. There's
not
a lot of things. So
bed.
There was a lot of, that was pretty crazy fucked up, you know.
Yeah.
Thinking about the Gypsy Acid Queen and stuff like that, and all that crazy getting, Anne Margaret getting beans dumped on her and stuff.
In a way, it's still the same now. Live is the last vestige. And now the
not
internet.
Not even
but,
really.
But mostly live. You can do what you want, because the implication is that to go to a live show, you have to choose to buy a ticket and walk through that door. And once you've done that, it's your own bloody fault. Whereas this sort of, you can't show that on television because your kids might be watching thing. I think that's why I'm a live guy. I do a lot of live shows, and it's going well in the UK and Australia, and it's starting to go well here. And I get lots of opportunities to do telly and take very few of them because... I get to be exactly what
telly
I want.
Telly, short for television.
I call it Vish. Yeah. I get to say exactly what I want, and no one's going to stop me unless someone bombs one of my shows.
It does.
It's unlikely.
It's a weird thing, which is happened to me to some degree, which is, you know, when you're dealing in television, and even cable, even Comedy Central, it's like a lot of arguments over content and, you know, constant discussions about what's going on and what you can say and can't say. And some of it is content and FCC stuff. And then other parts of it are just lots of you running everything past people all the time.
Trying to read the zeitgeist, trying to second guess the reaction,
and
trying to not upset your listenership.
Getting stuff back that has notes on it from guys that aren't that funny and stuff like that. And doing everything by committee. And you start getting this dose of sort of just doing your own thing, writing a book, or doing a live stage show, or doing a podcast or doing a musical or something, and you start getting used to that. And I think he ends up being like George Clooney, where you're sort of like, hey man, one day I'm in LA, next minute I'm in Italy, one minute I'm on top of a stewardess, next time I'm top of a model.
Yeah.
And then you tell him, hey, how about you crab out some kids and marry a chick with some stretch marks and settle down? And he goes,
Nah. I got used to the gelato, baby. Yeah. I got used to a certain lifestyle.
It does. And on the flip side of that is the trouble is if you get into television, you start forgetting that that's bullshit. You start going, oh, yeah, I get these notes back from a whole lot of execs who don't actually know anything about comedy. And you just get used to it and start accepting that as normal. And that's the risk of getting sucked into
it. It basically becomes like the TSA, which is, you're just standing there eventually taking your shoes off and your belt off and your wallet out and your computer out. And you go, look, I'm not a terrorist. I don't care about any of this stuff. But you're just in line and everyone else is in line with you. And you start hearing a lot of, look, that's what you do. It makes them happy. It gets them off their back. Just go. They want this line change. Just go ahead and change it and then fix it. And that way it'll feel like they had their, they want to feel heard and it'll be disrespectful. Do you ignore their notes? So just, and you just get indoctrinated into this world, and and you stop thinking what's going to make the audience laugh,
and suddenly
instead
you're changing.
Think what's going to keep these people happy.
What's going to work on Vij?
Suddenly it started as cunt and ended up as cad, and you think, oh, well, it starts with a cut. It's fine.
So, Tim mentioned, I have a question. You look so familiar, and I know I've seen you before. How do most people know you, aside from the fact that they slept with you? Are you big on YouTube?
My American audience know me because of YouTube. Yeah, I don't know. I've got a few sort of big YouTube vids. I guess because I wear a lot of makeup, once you've seen me once, you probably think that's familiar. But yeah, I'm doing this tour here for the first time, and all the managing people are like, you can't just come in here and tour. You know, we need to launch a viral campaign.
Is that when we sign?
Yeah, you sound like that. And
listen here, son.
Listen,
you can't just come in here and cheer. You got a viral campaign.
Wow. Where are these managers from that you're meeting with?
I don't know. I think they're
frontier.
Making it up.
Yeah.
All right, fuck you all. But, you know, I'm doing theaters and people are buying tickets, and I think it's just because of YouTube.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how does it work? I mean, like, when you're, you know, you're from Perth, did you say?
Yeah.
And then, you know, obviously known in England, you know, in Australia and other parts where you're trying to break in here in the United States. So what size theater, like if you're playing, like LA's a shitty town for doing live shows, for instance. Yeah. New York's probably a lot better. But like when you're thinking about playing a theater in Los Angeles or a theater in New York or a theater in San Francisco, those are all in the United States, by the way. Does somebody go, look, 1,000-seater or don't go over 800 or hell, you could do 1,700 or does it sort of work that way?
Yeah, I don't know. It depends. I'm doing 1,700 on Saturday night in Anaheim, of all places. So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
My old band played there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's a nice theater.
Did they fire?
It's the Grove of Anaheim.
The Grove of Anaheim.
It's the City National Grove of Anaheim.
It used to be the Sun Theater.
Yes, that's right. That is this Saturday, July 2nd. Man, that sounds like a good
show.
Yeah,
I'm doing Austin the night before, and I think that's like a 900-seater, and that's sold out. I'm basically seem to be able to, without advertising, without anything, sell about 1,000 seats a town pretty easily.
You know,
and I didn't know that. It's hard to regulate when it's YouTube and stuff. But
right.
I'm so stoked, because as I said, I'm a live guy, and it's just, I've done this little tour, and now I feel like I can just keep touring, and I think it'll work, you know, without too much rocket science.
And that was Tim Minchin.
Lots of I's in his name, as Adam Kroll observed. The man with four A's in his name.
You have three I's in your name. It's weird how he reads things, but...
It's just so weird. Like, he makes observations that like, was like, yes.
Yeah, Tim even was like, oh, yeah, sure. No one's ever really put it that way. But
I really feel like there should be an E in there instead of one of these I's, but I'll talk to your parents about that.
But I really enjoyed having Tim on. And
he's great. He's delightful.
And him and Adam are great.
I hope he actually tells Ben Folds that he said hi. Like, for some reason, that's important to me.
Yeah, me too. Adam needs to, or Ben needs to know how much Adam loves him all the time.
And how much he thinks about him. Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah. All right, before we get going with the next clip, got to remind everybody once again about Madison Reed Mister. Because if you're like me, you're getting a little salt in that pepper. And I think it's
time. I've almost convinced Chris to go full redhead, by the way.
Almost. And if I did, I'd still use Madison Reed Mister because they...
Of course you'd have to.
Yeah. Look, Madison Reed Mister, they are a gray blending natural color for your hair and your beard, and it looks super good. Adam uses it. Lynette Carolla uses it because they make a lot of great stuff for women. Gina uses it, and I use it. and I look freaking awesome. All right, so look, maybe you're not looking for a drastic change. You just want it to look like, oh, he looks good. I don't know what it is. I'll tell you what it is. It's because you're using Madison Reed Mister. They deliver right to your door. The process is quick and easy, and you just have to apply the color gel to your hair, add the activator, wait a few minutes, rinse, shampoo, and you look mighty fine. Go to MadisonReedMister.com. That's MadisonReedMR.com, and use the code ADAM10 for 10% off plus free shipping on your first box of Madison Reed Mister. One more time, that's code ADAM10. All right, let's get going with another clip. This one is a listener request, and if anybody wants to send a request, just email us, classics@adamcarolla.com, or you can find us on Instagram, @GiovanniGiorgio, @ChrisLoxamano1, slide into our DMs, Google us, just find a way to contact us, Facebook. However, let us know what you want to hear, because we love sharing these clips with everybody. Gio, this one's from Eric. What did he want?
He said, hey, Chris and Gio, recently you played some clips from the Rob Riggle live show and reminded him of the Bryan Cranston live show from some years ago. And he thinks it was especially hilarious because Cranston was saying some stuff that maybe somebody wouldn't want to say if their wife and daughter were in the audience. And Adam even made comment of that. And this is from Adam Carolla Show 409, Bryan Cranston, Teresa Strasser, Brian Bishop. This is from September of 2010. This is the infamous Bryan Cranston live show, Adam Carolla Show 409. This is for you, Eric P. Check it out.
Donnie, do you have that picture of me in my putt-putt car that shows, says we, I looked at a picture, Dad, you'll probably remember this. We rented a house up in Chatsworth in the 60s, I guess.
And,
yeah, if you take a look, if you take a look at this, by the way, Dad kept a tight yard. Look at that, man. Like an Asian gardener. Like a so fastidious. Yeah, no wonder I have an eating disorder, Dad. And by the way, this is where we took the pictures.
Yeah.
Imagine what the rest of the yard looked like. This was a garden spot.
This was it.
It's luscious.
It's dilapidated, obviously, but it was a rental, I'm sure, because the Corollas are
that's
renters.
That's a 57
but,
jet sweep.
Yeah.
That's a beauty.
Yeah, mint. This is Chatsworth. By the way, those are you must know those hills well.
I do well, and in the 60s. So you were up in Chatsworth. Were you with the Manson family by any chance, Pops? Because they were up in the Chatsworth Hills in the 60s.
Charlie and Tex used to come by with a six string. My dad would sit in with a flugelhorn, and they would jam until the street lights turned off. Yeah, yeah. I'm imagining. I'm doing the math. Like I was born in 64. This was 67. I'm guessing they were running around those hills at that time. I mean,
exactly right.
Yeah.
Now, who could not love that? Look at those
That's
eyes.
That's the thing.
It's the eyes. He's dreamy.
He's such a... I would call him a delight.
I met him.
Did you?
You did?
In sort of. I wasn't born in 64. I was born in the previous decade.
Sorry.
And so we were up... my cousin and I were horseback riding at the Spahn Ranch. Of course, this is way before he was planning all this. And we were renting our horses. They're horseback riding. And they said, some guy comes running and says, Charlie's on the hill. Charlie's on the hill. Let's go. And all of a sudden, all these people who were around this compound jumped on horses and took off.
Wow.
And there was just an old guy left, kind of looked like Pops a little bit. He was, mm-hmm. And he brought our horses out. And my cousin and I got on, and we're like, what was that about? And we start clopping along. Horseback riding is not what it's cracked up to be.
No, it seems good.
You're sitting on a future piece of glue,
yeah.
That just wants to go slowly.
Nah.
I don't find any.
Other thing that disappoints more that sounds better, bed and breakfast. Yeah. Sounds awesome until you're pissing with a stranger and Nana's burning your eggs and you're in a bed that some teenager killed himself on 3 years earlier and it smells weird.
Or what's worse, one time my wife and I were at a bed and breakfast and we heard these people next door going at it. I mean,
That was us.
Was it you?
That was me and Brian, actually.
Oh my God.
That was earlier.
It's awesome.
Yeah, and you're someone's house. It's basically a house for people.
And then you wake up and you're having eggs next to them and they're looking at each other and the guy is looks like a Buick, and
it's weird, and you don't know what the rules are. Like you go, like, look, we're going into town to have a couple of steaks and some cocktails. Is the porch light going to be on when we We don't have keys to your house. Yeah, I know you're not going to leave the door open. Like, what do we knock on grandma's
window? The key will be in the flower pot when you get home.
It smells like somebody's house. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like a hotel smells like a hotel. This is somebody's house.
Yeah. Now, what happened with Manson?
Oh, the horse. Yeah.
So we're going horseback riding, and we're riding along, and about half an hour later, we see this posse of riders coming back, just walking, and there's one guy, stringy black hair, crazy eyes, with his hands tied behind his back and just on the back of the horse. He's like this. And my cousin and I laughed and joked to each other, oh, that must be Charlie.
Right.
Maybe a year and a half later, this all goes down. They catch him, Spawn Ranch, Charlie Manson. We're on the phone. Oh, my God! Oh, my wow. God! We could have been killed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although, I don't know, that was my brush.
That was a brush.
I feel
like a young, able-bodied Bryan Cranston could have fucking dropped an elbow and snapped him like kindling. Yeah, but you don't sell yourself short.
That's what surprised her, because he's a mastermind, that guy.
Yeah.
And he would have had this Leslie Van Houten just go, hi, right. Bryan. How are you?
He could have spooned
you. You don't see it.
Yeah.
Stick a spoon in your spleen or something.
He was charismatic. I mean, you got to say that because, like, you know, I say to my wife, Lynette, how about you get up early and make me some eggs? She's like, fuck yourself. And, I mean, that's the look. But the point is, I
read that in the card, the anniversary card.
Listen, I want you to get some of your girlfriends and head up to the La Bianca house. Here's a steak knife or so. Just go in through the doggy door and stab everyone who's in there. All right, sweetie?
Okay, Charlie.
I'm going to be here. I'm going to be home eating a Hot Pocket, all right?
Okay, Charlie.
All right, go to town.
I love you, Charlie.
Go to town. Yeah.
I love you.
That's a charismatic guy, right?
I don't know why we're doing this. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. No, I mean, let's, you know, give the devil his due. Yeah. He did have a way with the ladies.
Yeah, he did.
And I always thought there had to be a conversation that Tex had with Charlie at some point, because Tex was probably along for the sexual ride.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're going to bus stops and shelters and picking up hot 19-year-old runaways and bringing them back and plying them with Boone's Farm and then just having, just turning to crazy 60s orgies, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Tex would swing by in a stolen car. You're not uptight, are you?
Yeah.
Good. You want to do some mushrooms on a place with a dirt floor in it? Yeah. And the next thing you know, boom, it's the summer of love in a trailer, right?
Right.
Had to be weird, like at some point when Charlie pulled Tex aside and like Charlie was like, look, why don't you gather up all the super sexually active, hot 19-year-olds who don't mind pulling trains all weekend long with us over here. Right. I want you to get them some steak knives and send them up the hill to do some high-profile murdering. And Tex must have been like,
I'm sorry, what was that last part?
Charlie, we got a pretty good thing going on here. I want you to kill everyone on a hill.
We're stealing steak knives? And
No. I'm saying no more orgies.
No more orgies?
No. No, we're killing now.
Oh, we're killing them, all right.
No, not sexually. No, not sexually.
Oh,
I need you, what I need you to do is get some knives together.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to stay here.
You're staying here.
I'm going to stay here.
I'm getting knives.
Bring the Oldsmobile around.
Oldsmobile coming.
Get all the hot 19-year-olds we're formerly having sex with.
Don't kill them in the car.
No. Put them in the car.
Put them in the car.
Go up to the hill.
Okay.
And go find, like, Sharon Tate's house and stab everybody.
I have one of them Stars Maps magazines.
Use that. But, again, the sexual party is over for a little while down here. We're going to start a race ride.
All right.
Okay. Meanwhile, while you're up there stabbing,
yeah,
I'm going to be having a Hot Pocket and a Schlitz down here. All right? All right. Bring the car on. Awesome.
All right, sounds good.
Must have been a tough sell.
There
had to be some point where Tex was like, look, I got a blowjob scheduled for noon, so I don't
You can make it. You can make it.
I don't think we should break this up.
Oh, no, it's traffic. So, yeah, if you got the blowjob at noon, you're going to have to leave really early because L.A. traffic.
That's what my grandma used to say every time I went to the airport.
Right.
And that was the great Bryan Cranston sharing the stage live back in 2010.
And he still continues to guest on the show in 2020 via Zoom in the middle of a pandemic.
Yes. He loves Adam. All right, before we get going with the next clip, I want to remind everybody that this episode of... I have to keep switching between screens. Mark, okay. All right, before we get going with the next clip, I want to remind everybody that this episode of Corolla Classics is sponsored by ButcherBox. ButcherBox makes it easy to get high-quality, humanely raised meat that you can trust, and they deliver 100% grass-fed, grass-finished beef, free-range organic chicken, heritage-breed pork, and wild-caught seafood directly to your door. When you become a member, you're joining a community focused on doing what's better for all. That means caring about the lives of animals and the livelihoods of farmers, treating our planet with respect, and enjoying better meals together. All right, ButcherBox partners with folks who believe in better, going above and beyond when it comes to caring for animals, the environment, and sustainability. It's great tasting meat that you can feel good about, delivered right to your doorstep with free shipping. And they have box options and delivery frequencies to fit your needs. You can cancel anytime with no penalty. Ground Beef for Life is back. For a limited time, new members can get 2 pounds of ground beef for free in every ButcherBox order by signing up today at ButcherBox.com/Adam. That's ButcherBox.com/Adam to get ground beef for life. All right, we have one more clip for everybody, and this one is from 2016. It's a Rotten Tomatoes game. What's the theme?
It's Adam Carolla Show 1736 featuring Marcus Lemonius, Matt Atchity, Gina Grad, and Brian Bishop. Marcus isn't in this portion, just Atchity, Grad, and Bishop. It's from January of 2016. It's the 66th installment of the Rotten Tomatoes game. Matt Atchity returns. It's military themed. Let's check it out.
All right, and listen, I don't know if I heard you correctly, but I would not splooge on a nice meal, even if it was every now and again.
Especially,
all right, Harry,
not takeout.
You're talking a guy who got peed on in high school,
that's,
and even I wouldn't go for this.
Like,
okay,
a cookie indeed.
These guys are fucking weirdos in New York.
Some people.
Right?
All
that's
right,
where you're headed this weekend, my friend.
Oh,
you're headed there.
No. All right, shall we do a little Rotten Tomatoes game with
absolutely.
Matt Atchity? Play the game, then we'll bring Marcus in.
All right. So our theme today is inspired by the release this week of 13 Hours, The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi. It's
mm-hmm.
the latest film from Michael Bay. Stars John Krasinski, based yeah. on a true story. So the theme is...
Is that movie good?
I haven't seen it yet. They're not screening it till tonight. So
okay.
I'll let you know.
All right.
But today's theme is military movies based on true stories.
Ooh. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
First up, we're going to go with a film from last year, 2015 film from director Clint Eastwood, starring Bradley Cooper as Chris Kyle, the most lethal sniper in U.S. military history. The movie is American Sniper.
Before you guys guess, Adam, I thought you might like this.
Yes.
If you look on your screen, they did the actual world premiere last night, and they did it at Dallas Cowboys Stadium.
The world premiere
of 13 Hours.
Oh,
that,
sorry.
That Matt was talking about.
Yeah.
So they lowered down that screen a little bit. I just thought you might find that a little interesting.
Yeah. Well, we said if I were Jerry Jones, I'd have that thing hooked up to you porn, man. I'd have a movie night,
oh,
man.
Yeah.
I know the score of this one roughly because I looked it up once. So I got to recuse myself.
Ooh.
Or. Something
you should be able, well, unless you know it, Noah, you should be able to guess.
No,
oh, I remember it was in the whatever, but maybe I'll be off. So
yeah,
let's see.
I had remembered this.
Well,
too.
Well, all right, I'll tell you what.
You guess the audience score.
All right, I'll guess the audience.
Wait, I have backup
score.
Movies.
Score this?
All right, I'll tell you what. Well, here's what we'll do. I'll add 5 points to whatever I guess. I don't know the score, but I have
extra movies.
I have extra moves?
Let's just swap it out. We'll go with
okay.
We'll
swap it out.
Let's swap just for the first alternate.
Curious
okay.
about it.
Now I don't know if I nailed
yeah,
it.
Me too.
Do you want to hear? Let's do the score really quick
God
on this
damn
one.
It. Okay. I think it's like, I assume it was like 76 or something.
Oh, wow. I thought it was a lot higher. I said 92.
I didn't. I thought it was 73.
72.
Are you sure it doesn't count?
We gotta throw that out. Yeah,
right.
I think
right,
we.
So
we're
gonna go. I thought I was thinking actually 73, but I think it was that low. But,
definitely throw
right.
that out.
All right.
Fuck.
We'll start with the first alternate then. 2006 film from director Clint Eastwood. This was the companion piece to Flags with Our Fathers. Tells the story of the Battle of Iwo Jima from the point of view of the Japanese soldiers. The movie is Letters from Iwo Jima.
Mm.
This is the only one of the two that I saw. I didn't see
it.
The other one.
Oh, the other...
I didn't see Flags of Our Fathers.
Oh, boy. Can't remember. I think I liked it. I gotta believe... 79.
Jeez, I thought that was a really hard movie to dislike. I said 90.
I've never seen it, but I can assume by the subject matter I went 84.
Certified fresh, 91%.
Mm. What year was this?
2006.
It was 6.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just a few months off from Flags of Our Fathers. They shot them both at the same time.
Right, right.
Were there some characters that are in the same, the both movies?
I think there's very brief, yes, but okay. only very, very brief.
What'd you go for, Brian?
90. So I was off by one.
All right.
All right, next up, a 2014 film directed by Peter Berg, starring Mark Wahlberg, Ben Foster, about four Navy SEALs on a covert mission, and only one of them makes it out alive. The movie is Lone Survivor.
You know what's funny? I like this movie, but I couldn't stay with it like I wanted to or something. Very well done. Just
didn't see it. It's been on my queue forever, so I'm going to get into it.
I liked it a lot.
Hold on.
88%.
79.
I said 79 as well.
Certified fresh at 75%.
Oh. Brian, doing well.
You called me out beforehand.
A little pep talk helped you.
We're on single digits.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Next up is a 2010 film, which is the third collaboration between Paul Greengrass and Matt Damon after they worked on the Bourne series together. This is based off of the book about the Iraq invasion and things that were happening in Baghdad specifically. The movie is The Green Zone.
I've never heard of this movie.
Yeah, you'd kind of remember the commercial, but Jesus, I have no idea. I never saw this. It's one of those, everything looked good about it, but no one ever really said anything good about it.
Is Matt Damon the only star?
No, Greg Kinnear, Brendan Gleeson, Amy Ryan, Jason Isaacs. Mm.
Okay. All right, this will be a big game changer here. 61.
I said 70. I haven't seen it.
I've never heard of it. I said 62.
Green Zone is rotten at 53%.
See, my hunch was all these war movies are going to be mostly highly rated, so Matt had probably to dig deep for some that were bad, and I should have gone lower on this one.
All right. What'd you do?
70. Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
I said 62.
All right. In the hunt. Here we go.
All right. Next up, iconic 1970 film about a very specific general, co-written by Francis Ford Coppola, legendary performance by George C. Scott.
Hardcore.
Oh
Patton. Okay.
Innocent bastard.
Let's see. Everyone loved this. It's just one of those movies. Right? Yeah. Okay. 94%.
Would not shock me if this is a perfect 100, but I said 98.
Well, then I went low. I said 88.
Patton is certified fresh at 95%.
Ooh. What was yours, 98?
Yep.
Ooh, I'm crawling back into this one.
That last one helped you.
Here we go.
All right, last film. 1963 film based on a legendary escape from a German POW camp, starring actual World War II veterans in this film, including James Garner and Richard Attenborough. Also stars Steve McQueen. And Charles Bronson and Donald Pleasance and basically everybody cool working at the time. The movie is The Great Escape.
I just saw this last week.
All right.
Holds up, right? Like, this is still a really good movie.
It's yeah. Oh, yeah. The soundtrack's pretty interesting as well.
Can't not
a little
like
campy,
it.
But
still, it's got had to get some tough ones maybe early on. Okay.
63? 62?
1963. I'm going to say 91%.
I went big and I said 100.
I'm going low all day. I said 79.
Great Escape, certified fresh, 93%.
Fuck.
Damn it.
Not me.
Well, Brian.
We say 91?
Yeah. Brian got a...
This is a close game.
Had a nice gap at the beginning, but making it up ever since. All right, Gary's going to crunch
those five?
Numbers.
Is that five
movies? I'm out. I know I'm out.
Coming up in third, Gina Grad with 41. Adam with 36. And Bald Brian with 32.
Ooh. No more pep talks, Adam.
Well, it was close. That's why you got to play the game.
You gave me a stern talking to, and I listened.
That's right.
I was receptive to the message.
I gave you some bulletin board material.
And the message was kick everyone's ass.
Rotten or fresh?
RottenTomatoes.com is where you go.
And that was a Rotten Tomatoes game. Hope you did well. That'll do it for Corolla Classics. Thanks again for listening and for spending the weekend with us. We love doing the show, and we love all the requests that we get from you. So whether you have a request, comment, or anything, just find us online. Let us know what you're thinking. We really appreciate it, and we'll see you next weekend. Until then, my name's Chris Laxmana. That's Superfan Giovanni.
Mahalo. And get it on.
That episode of Corolla Classics was brought to you by Geico, because if you switch to Geico during Geicoween, then you're going to save a ton, all right? October is their favorite time of year, and the folks over at Geico have been working even harder to cast out high rates and craft just the right policy for you and your family. So get a quote today at geico.com and see just how much you could save. Happy Geicoween, everyone.